Our gospel passage, our gospel passage this morning is from Mark's gospel, chapter 9, which is just past the center of the gospel, which is important. I'll tell you that in a minute. This is a story of the event of the transfiguration of Jesus. Six days later, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured before them. And his clothes became dazzling white, such as no one on earth could bleach. And there appeared to them Elijah with Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say, for they were terrified. And then a cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud there came a voice saying, "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." And suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one with them anymore, but only Jesus. The Gospel of the Lord. Just to put this reading in perspective, we are right now in the middle of Mark's gospel. And remember, I told you the middle, the very central part of Mark's gospel is the identification by Peter that Jesus is the Son of God. Jesus says to his disciples, "Who do they say I am?" And they say, "Some say John the Baptist, some say Elijah. Who do you say I am?" And Peter says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." That's the dead center part of Mark's gospel, because the first part of Mark's gospel begins with the ministry of Jesus coming right out of the desert, and it shows what his ministry is going to be about: healing, forgiving, bringing people together, standing up against the temple as he does just prior to that statement by Peter, and then preaching a little bit about what's going to happen in the future when he dies. And then comes this moment. It's placed here for a reason, because from this point on, we are going to be seeing more of the revelation of who God really is for the rest of the time that Jesus is ministering. And so it's a turning point, and it's a very important turning point, because if you take the first part of the gospel, we're trying to learn what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. What does it mean to follow Jesus? He calls the disciples, he calls us. We watch what he does, we try to do the same, and somehow recognize him as they do in the multiplication of loaves and fish. They recognize that there's something divine going on here. And then we come to this moment of transfiguration. Now, transfiguration, there's lots of ways to look at this. I always looked at it, reading what was there, that he somehow was translucent and lights all over the place. It was like the original light show, the laser show, you know. And standing there was Moses and Elijah for a purpose. Moses presents the law. Elijah presents the prophets. That's Judaism, the whole fullness of Judaism present. And they're sitting here talking to Jesus, which says to the mind of the Hebrew, Jesus is being validated by their whole tradition. And when they disappear, the only one left is Jesus. And obviously the voice says, "This is who you need to listen to. Never mind Moses and the prophets. Listen to this guy." That's why prior to this, before that this all takes place, Jesus says, "Beware of the scribes and the Pharisees, because they will lead you astray, because they tell you things that they themselves don't even do. So don't follow their leadership." And here you have Jesus now being presented by God to the rest of us as the one to listen to. Okay? Okay, on another level, and I think on a more important level, transfiguration introduces to us the possibility that in everyday life, it is possible to somehow break through to the metaphysical or the mystical. It is possible to have an experience of God in our everyday lives. Now, we can say that, and that would make a great banner hanging over here. Remember, God is in your everyday life. We say it all the time. Do we recognize that God is that close, and that every one of us, like James, John, and Peter, and Jesus himself could somehow radiate the experience of God. If we go any further than that, a lot of what we have learned is going to come up and say, no, don't listen to that. That's not what it's all about. You are not worthy. You are a sinner. You're not good enough. You especially should not even think of those kind of things. That's heresy. Well, I'm here to tell you that Jesus, and that's why I keep coming back to, let's look at Jesus as a man. When you say he's God, all these things don't make any sense. They're all God things that never happened to us. He was a man. And in his journey to God, he experienced something that so transformed him, that so changed him, that so made God visible in him, in the ordinariness of his life, that he somehow touched the world and made a huge difference for lots of people. Now, we read these things as miracles, God doing this. We read God filling in all kinds of holes that everybody could not fill themselves. We see ourselves always on our knees kind of begging God to do something. God is here available to us, each one of us, if we are willing to open ourselves to the truth that the mystical is within all of us. John makes a very strong point in his gospel. The indwelling of God is not make-believe. It's not a promise of heaven. And that's one of the things I have about the words to the song. It's evangelical in as much as, you know, there's great promise and there's a better tomorrow. It's now. If we are not living eternity now, we're not going to live it, period. It was never intended to be a place where we escape the horrors of this life and go off and live forever in some la-la land where everything is going to be perfect. Nobody knows what's beyond this. Nobody. You understand that. I don't think that's a shock. Nobody knows. And those who conjecture on their own experience perhaps, which may be a wonderful thing, but what happens to one person doesn't necessarily mean it happens to everybody. We all want to be like Jesus. There is only one Jesus. We can, however, share the same experiences in a way that is viable and able to be experienced every day, every day. Jesus was a man. I love him as a man. He's great as the Christ, but I love him as a man because this moment says to me, with all the things that are wrong with me, with all the things that I can find as failures, as weaknesses, as limitations, all of it, and all the negativity I could possibly lay on myself or let somebody else lay on top of me, to bury all the hope and possibilities of my life, it is possible for me to find my passion and to give my passion in my life and thus reveal God. Now, we talk about Jesus' passion. We're going to be coming into Lent. And when I say the passion of Jesus, what do we think of? The cross, the beating, the judgment, the rejection, the betrayal, the death, the burial. That's his passion. That's how he ended his life. That's how it ended. His passion, Jesus' passion was life. It was life, which is why John goes on and on to say, I am the resurrection and the life. He was so passionate about life, he couldn't stand not making life right for other people. He was driven into the desert by the Holy Spirit, or the Spirit, and came out with a passion for life that allowed him to see the horrors of what was going on around him, and he tried to make a difference. And it didn't matter if he was rejected. Didn't matter if he was judged by his church to be a heretic. Didn't bother him at all that people disagreed with him. He spoke out to those who would put some kind of boundaries between him and the possibility of giving life. When they questioned, how can you do these things? He said, why can't we do these things? This is what life is about. His passion was life, and that's how he should be remembered, as one who is passionate about life. And if you can understand that, then I need to ask myself, and what is my passion? What am I really passionate about? I was very touched back when, I'm always touched, you know, but I was very touched when at one point I had to go to a gastroenterologist because I had vocal cord problems. And they did a scope and found some darkness and stuff, and they thought it was cancer, and long story short, it wasn't. Or if it was, it went away. But the man that I saw was Dr. Yanagisawa. I never forget this man. Dr. Yanagisawa was one of the greats down at Yale New Haven Hospital. And I was sent to him by my doctor. And Dr. Yanagisawa explained all that was going on. And it's a horrible thing if you've ever had an endoscopy, especially if you have a weak gag reflex like I do. It's awful. It's horrible. But anyway, I watched this thing going down and watching my vocal cords and seeing this dark thing. And he explained all the possibilities, and I had to be silent for, what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that. We were writing notes, you know, and I wasn't supposed to speak, breathe, hum. I'm never supposed to sing. I did. But it went away. And, of course, he blessed, you know, he said, I don't know what was there, but 3 weeks later it wasn't there, so somebody must have been praying for you. We went to his office, and on the wall in his office, and this is a surgeon, was a painting, some kind of an artistic expression, a painting of some kind, and there was a patient laying on the table, and there was a doctor standing over him, and over the shoulder of the surgeon was an image of Jesus. And I took note of it, and he said, you know, that's there because I believe that what we do somehow reflects the possibilities that are ours only because God is with us. He said, every time I go into surgery or any time I go into a patient's life, this is what's behind me. And it was obvious after the way he had treated me through all of this to see this image of a man who is, you know, well known, very famous, and very important in the medical world, who believes that God is standing on his shoulder all the time. And that impressed me very much. And I can't help but think about him when I'm talking about this. And there are so many other people in our lives. There was a man in the 1930s, 40s, who had a real strong faith in the dignity of humanity. He believed so strongly in a dignity about human beings that in the darkest days of his life, he put himself in the place of dying for someone who was much younger and who deserved to die, but he took his place because dignity in human living was more important to him. An ordinary guy, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. A woman, young woman, 16 years old, was very, very convinced that God was a part of her life in such a way that when she prayed, God would always listen. And she had a great strength in her prayer. And one of the things that she promised God was that in keeping with the way she was reared, purity and lack of immorality, avoiding immorality in any case, was something that she cherished and treasured. And one day she was accosted by a man who raped her and murdered her because she would not allow him to use her. Maria Goretti, little Italian girl, unknown, ordinary, who had a passion and who lived it. There are people in the world today who also have passions of different kinds, all of you here have some. It's hard not to look at the world around us and the state that we're in and recognize not heroes, because they're not being sung as heroes, but people who have such a deep sense of commitment to life that they put their lives on hold many times in order to fulfill that passion. You know, we reward and we award and celebrate athletes who have a passion for their craft and who go to extremes to accomplish great things. And we applaud them and give them medals. They live their passion. There are people who understand that the world is such a place that a passion about living and a passion about preserving what we have around us, they put their lives on the line, sometimes in protest, sometimes by actually working in the chemical world, the biological world, and the political arena to ensure that what we have remains somehow intact. That's their passion. Most of them are unknowns. Most of them only make the papers when they're caught somehow in a rally or saying something against somebody that they have to be attacked and belittled because of what they believe. There are people in this world, in this country, who have never, ever, 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 ever had a racist thought in their minds. There are people who are so passionate about equality, so passionate about the importance of treating each other as equals because we are all the same, so convinced that some put their lives on hold and get together with others of the same belief and try to effect a change, maybe in a neighborhood, maybe in a city, maybe in some small community, maybe in the countryside. But they are there doing that because of what their passion is. And it drives them. They get up every morning to do it. They believe in it and they do it. Ordinary people. There are ordinary people that go to work every day that have passions that sometimes get put on hold because we have to have jobs. I don't know anybody, I shouldn't say that, but there probably aren't too many who are really passionate about their work. It's called work because it's work, not because it's fun. It's survival. And you know that because as soon as they win $1 million, they quit. Or now at least 2 or 3 million. The cost of freedom has gone up. But people have passion. We all have passion. We're passionate about something. Artists are passionate about what they do. They starve many times for their art. History's loaded with those people. They're not celebrated until they're dead 500 years. They did it because they had something to say. And brothers and sisters, I think this passage today is about transfiguration. It's about allowing the passion that we know in our lives to open the door that God can somehow go through us in what we are passionate about and touch other people's lives. We may never know that we've touched somebody's life. We may never see the result of what we have done. But to be passionate about it enough, convinced enough about it enough, that when the opportunity comes, we can stand on top of the mountain where God lives, in quotes, and allow God to touch the world through us. I think the invitation today, for me too, especially, is to figure out what is my passion and how does it affect the world around me and how does it change me when I live it. Reflect on how your life has changed because of your passion, who you are today because of what you have chosen as a passion, and know that that ordinary everyday thing changes the world. Just a thought. Amen.